Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience. As always, it means a lot that I have this show and I have you as such a great audience. Really deeply appreciate you. We've been going through a little bit of stress lately. Yes, I'll just announce it. You can check it out on our website, Bregan.com, but we're being sued for $29 million by Robert Malone because we were the only people who he couldn't shut up, being just, you know, news critical of him like any news person should be. But anyway, this is just great to be here. This is, you know, we're refounding our nation here and we're reclaiming ourselves. And this is also on the radio. You'll hear this on PRN.live. And we have a very good guest today, Alex Newman. He is marvelous.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Hi, folks. I just want to take a minute to catch you up on what's happened since Dr. Robert Malone has sued me and Ginger for $25 million, supposedly for us defaming him. I've never defamed anybody in my life. I've done really strong reform work, taking on major physicians, top physicians in the world, top people at the federal government, and, you know, written about it a fair amount. Look it up on our website, too. And no one's even ever accused me of defaming them, and I have not defamed Robert Malone. He wanted to stop me from being able to talk because he knew that that's what the lawyers would do when his new book is coming out, when he's getting his new foundation going. And he expresses great disappointment in his Substack when he, quote, comes back from, I guess, vacation, or comes back from a yacht in the Mediterranean and finds out that Bregan is still writing. The Bregans are still writing, folks. We're just not going to back down. It's not just a matter of our own freedom. It's that to speak. It's that Dr. Malone, you can find this on our essays on America Out Loud, and you can find them on our website in the Desmond Malone sections. But he's been attacking some of the finest doctors in our movement. And because I've stood up for them in print, things have changed. The doctors are coming together more, and I'm just being really supported everywhere I write and everywhere I have any dealing. So I know a lot of you are worried about me and Ginger, but we are thriving. I promise you we're thriving. The movement is coming together more now that I've come out and talked about Malone attacking and fractionating the movement. People are just being more open about this terrible amount of distress he's caused with legal threats against other people and this lawsuit against me, which also involves a few other people. It's all up on Bregan.com. sorry to start in that heavy fashion, Alex. I'm really looking forward to today talking to you. We had a very interesting conversation earlier today, essentially about the most dangerous areas in the world. And I thought we'd try to have just a conversation about it. I'd love you to start talking about your travel maybe abroad recently and some of the stuff you've been seeing there and some of the materials I have to show the audience.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Dr. Bregan. It's a tremendous honor to be here with you. And I did just return recently from Egypt. I was there for the UN, they call it the COP27, the climate conference. And I was there as a reporter. I try to go to almost all of these. I've been going since about 2009, not just the climate summits, but also I went down to the UN Conference on Sustainable Development in Rio de Janeiro and other ones. And I think most Americans don't even realize this conference happened. And yet the fate of the world was being decided there. Joe Biden was there. I actually ran into John Kerry there, tried to ask him some questions, but it was very hard to hear him through his face diaper. terrible. Basically, you know, several big stories came out of there. The biggest political news was that they came up with this mechanism. They say it's a loss and damage. It's basically a perpetual climate reparations. They say that because Americans industrialized, because we drove cars, we powered our cities with electricity, now we owe the entire world this huge debt for our carbon dioxide emissions, and we need to transfer wealth from the American middle class to the kleptocrats that have been keeping the third world in poverty for all these decades. And so the U.S. government agreed to that, and so did every other government in the world. But even the bigger story, I think, Dr. Bregan, was about the religious side of this. So you had, right before the COP27 began, the UN Development Program put out a major report for the conference, arguing that essentially the religious, or the moral and ethical system and framework that had evolved with mankind over thousands of years was no longer adequate for today, because it wasn't helping us to properly care for Mother Earth and the climate and things like this. And so they actually openly and transparently called for a new system of morality, a new ethical system.
Wow, I haven't heard this. This is amazing. Not a surprise, but wow, go ahead.
Yep. They even unveiled what they originally called the new Ten Commandments. They had this interfaith process.
Yes.
Yeah, so you did hear about that.
Tell the audience about the new Ten Commandments.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And we'll have a major article. It'll be the cover story in the next issue of the New American Magazine for the subscribers. And I think we'll put it online for a while. But they came out with this. Originally, they called it the new Ten Commandments. Later, they got a lot of bad press about that. Obviously, a lot of Christians, a lot of Jews were offended, right? So I believe it or not, I had a 40-minute exclusive interview with the organizers of this whole thing at the UN summit. Very prominent individuals, I mean, religious leaders of various denominations and things. And they told me, yeah, we got some bad press about the, you know, inventing a new Ten Commandments. So now we're calling it an addendum to the Ten Commandments. We're not replacing the Ten Commandments. But they said they are working on the third covenant. They're going to build, they told me, and it's on camera, they said, we're working on building the real kingdom of heaven here on earth. So, you know, these are things that were deeply offensive to a lot of Christian, a lot of Jewish, a lot of Muslim people. They walked up to the top of what they say is Mount Sinai. You know, it's called Mount Sinai, whether it's the real one or not, I don't know. But they smashed the tablets bearing the new Ten Commandments, kind of a replay of what Moses did when he came down and saw the Israelites worshiping a golden calf. Very, very bizarre. But I think the significance of what's happening here, Dr. Bregan, is it's hard to overstate. They want to bring the religions of the world together behind this UN agenda to restructure society, to restructure the world, and basically put all power and authority in the United Nations. And they've brought a lot of religious leaders on board with this agenda.
Yeah, this is really a shocking story, which you already are telling me more about than I'd heard before. Can you pinpoint the, how close can you come to pinpointing who's behind it?
That's a very good question. I spent some good time digging. I'd say the real simple answer is this comes right out of the pit of hell. But you know, in human terms, I spent a lot of time digging into where the money's coming from, right? There were several major organizations that were involved in organizing this. You had, it's called the Elijah Interfaith Institute. They also call themselves the Elijah Board of World Religion Leaders or something like that. So that was one of the big players. And I tracked their financing. They are funded by the United Nations. In particular, they're actually an official partner of UNESCO. This is the UN Educational Organization. They're funded by the Rockefellers. They're funded by the Rockefeller Foundations, of course. They're funded by a number of these major American foundations. The other major group that was behind this, the Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development, they are also, both of these groups are funded by something called the Henry Luce Foundation. And, you know, I knew who Henry Luce was. He was the guy who came up with Time Magazine and Life Magazine, a publishing magnate. And I did a little bit more research on him and his foundation, and it didn't take long to find out that he was a member of the Skull and Bones Secret Society at Yale. Yep, and his colleagues there referred to him as Bale. That was his Bonesman nickname. He was also, and not a lot of people know this, he was very, he was actually a key player, one of the most important players in the Central Intelligence Agency's Operation Mockingbird. This was back in the 1950s and even into the 60s, where they were literally hiring journalists. They were putting American journalists and American newspaper editors and things on their payroll to propagandize the American people. So a lot of troubling money here. Also, a lot of these occult foundations, one of the major funders of these organizations is called the Fetzer Institute. And I came across them when I was researching social emotional learning about a year ago for a piece I did in the Epoch Times. This is kind of the new educational craze that's taking over public education in America. And it's really about manipulating the emotions and the mindsets of these children. And there's this very, very clear nexus with this move toward a kind of a one world new age religion. And so a lot of shady players there, Dr. Bregan. You know, I could go on, but I think that gives you a good sense of who's.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And it is, it's the, obviously it's going to be the, a piece of it is to just capture the idiots who have no idea what they're doing. That they're just going to end, they're either going to end, they're probably going to end up in chains to the Chinese Communist Party when it takes over the world.
Yep.
It's a very grim picture, and it's obviously Klaus Schwab's involved with it. It's got to be in the yep. UN. It is amazing how much they are used. When I say they, the, in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, we are the prey, Ginger, Bregan, and myself. COVID-19, the Global Predators, we are the prey. We begin to really look at the ties between all of the powers on the eastern side of the empire, or the, you know, really Xi Jinping and the whole thing he's doing with China, with the Belt and Road around the world and all these various things. And is, you know, he's building many, many coalitions with other countries and ruling us out. And these folks, the Chinese, you know, they're going to get their own Bitcoin going. And they're going to make it a Chinese currency, and they're going to compete with our dollar. I mean, they're really working at this. And then on the West side, we got Western Empire. We got, you know, more of the villains you already know about. But they're all working through the UN and the World Health Association, organization, WHO. Take us to something you were telling me about, which was the digital passport. And maybe I'll go right to number one. And this is, I got this directly from the man you're watching here today. And let's go to number one and let's play that if we can. And this is about the digital passports. It's is this the president of Indonesia or is this the head of
the health minister?
Mm-hmm. The health minister, yeah. I wrote this down as a misprint. And put that up when you can. That's number one.
Let's have a digital health certificate acknowledged by WHO if you have been vaccinated or tested properly, then you can move around. So for the next pandemic, instead of stopping the movement of the people 100%, which clogged the economy globally, you know, you can still provide some movement of the people. Indonesia has achieved, G20 country has agreed to have this digital certificate using WHO standard, and we will submit into the next World Health Assembly in Geneva as the revision to international health regulation. So hopefully for the next pandemic, we can still see some movement of the people, some movement of the goods, and movement of the economy.
Now, folks, just to clarify it, in next May, the Assembly, the World Health Assembly, which is the overseeing body for the World Health Organization, he's got a whole bunch of countries together, and they are going to probably succeed in getting past this digital passport. And believe me, it's not going to stop with, use for epidemics. Before even I leave this earth, at my age, I expect to see this thing with, you know, the requirement of your whole health record in there and maybe your social order or whatever those things are called. Take off from that. And I'm so glad you sent me this.
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about it, Dr. Bragan, because this is a critical part of the infrastructure of the global prison camp that they are building around us right now. You're exactly right. This is not going to stop with your vaccine status. It's not going to be just your COVID injection. Did you take all 18 of your boosters? Pretty soon they'll add in all the other vaccines, and then they're going to start adding in your social credit score like they're using in China. And, you know, the head of the World Health Organization himself, while we were in Egypt for this climate summit, he actually came out and publicly said, he posted it on Twitter, that even climate change is a public health crisis. He says gun violence is a public health crisis. They say
Bring up a tweet by him. That's number. That's is that number two? No, number three. Tedros tweets.
There you go. Yep, the climate crisis is
that's
a
his
health
tweet.
Crisis.
That's his little tweet there.
Yep. And so, of course, he was put there by Bill Gates and the Communist Chinese, as you've explained. And, you know, they're saying that under the guise of health, this World Health Organization needs to have all these powers, including the ability to limit your movement, to force you to carry this digital ID, digital vaccine passport. And now they're saying that everything else is also a health crisis. So under the guise of taking care of our health and taking care of the climate, they are building a totalitarianism that's more comprehensive than anything that the world has ever seen before.
That is really, really important. By the way, folks, James Roguski has a marvelous website where he is really taking the lead in putting together the information on the World Health Organization. He and I have worked together, and he is really now taking the lead here. I'm so glad he's doing that work. I got from James a very interesting... and this is number two, if people would play number two. This is the same man that you just saw speaking from in Indonesia. And by the way, James told me that even though he's the head of the health, he is a banker. Mm-hmm. And this was all taking place at the G20. And this is the GB part of the G20, which is the business people. And they're very, very, very powerful part of it. Can we get that up?
And I'd like to share with you what our Indonesia health sector has achieved in the G20 presidency and what are the business opportunities for you. The first one, we with the Ministry of Finance, G20, achieved to establish the Global Pandemic Fund. $1.4 billion has been pledged from 24 institutions. Clear result. And this is the largest fifth ever in World Bank has ever created. So hopefully in the next 5 years, 10 years, it will increase the size of the fund to $10 billion, which is the gap annually, $10 billion annually, which is the gap that is needed to prepare the world from the future pandemic. What are the business opportunities for you? $10 billion in health sector. So start investing.
$10 billion in investing. That's what he's telling everybody. Not lives saved. Not really good medicines. It's going to go into all the awful places it always goes into, folks. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And there never was a truer saying on the face of the earth. Tell us more about what you think about what's going on there, Alex.
Yeah, I think what's really important to note here, Dr. Bregan, is that what we're watching is the fusion of corporate power and state power, which is literally the very definition of fascism that was given by Benito Mussolini. It's the same policy that was implemented by the National Socialists in Nazi Germany, right? The National Socialism is, of course, fascism, Nazism. And what you have then is, on paper at least, yeah, you have private business. You have some nominal notion of private property. But under Klaus Schwab's model and under Mussolini's fascist model, the corporate sector basically does what the government says it must do. And it actually ties right back to what we were talking about with this religion thing at the climate summit. Peter Drucker, who was probably one of the best known management gurus ever to have lived, he has mentored some of the biggest business tycoons in the world. He's mentored some of the greatest religious figures in the world, people like Rick Warren, one of the top evangelical pastors in America. He's the guy at a Saddleback Church. And he actually took it a step further. He said that it's not just business and government. He said that all these major changes that they want to bring about in the world require thinking about this like a three-legged stool. The first leg of the stool, he said, is the public sector. That's the government sector. And so you have the UN bringing all the governments of the world together for climate change, for Agenda 2030, for World Health Organization digital passports. Then you have the second leg of the stool. That's the business sector, the private sector. And so they are now being told, you need to invest in this kind of health thing. You need to invest in this digital infrastructure to make this digital vaccine passport work. So they're basically just outsourcing the tyranny to private corporations because they'll be more effective. They'll privatize the profits and socialize the tyranny and the losses. And then the third leg of this stool, as Peter Drucker explained, is what he called the social sector. And he was very clear that this is really the religions of the world. And he said, you've got to bring them all on board if you want to make these big changes. And that is exactly what we're watching right now, Dr. Bregan. We're watching the stool being built, the governments, the religions, and the businesses of the world all brought together. And anybody who stands outside of this, people like us, people like the other wonderful show hosts here on Brighteon, we're considered extreme. We're considered, whatever other nasty term they want to throw, because we don't want to participate in this.
Yeah, it's happening faster than I imagined as I look at the World Health Organization and how they just think that that's just going to be a big part of what they do. Now, there's lots of other areas. There's agricultural and food that's under control. There's going to be a lot of other areas as well. Very, very big is going to be the financing and the banks and the digital currencies. But it's very possible that the World Health Organization, having demonstrated that could have everybody in the world crawling to their music, literally, that they think that this is really the way to go. And I think it might even be the most, maybe even more dangerous than the financial or right now. Do you have that same sense? They just really bent on empowering the United Nations and the World Health Organization.
There's no question about it, Dr. Bregan. Another area that I've focused on very intensely over the last 5 or 6 years is the education side. We have now all power over education being very rapidly consolidated at the global level under UNESCO, the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, to the point where Bill Gates went over there in 2004, signed an agreement with them to create basically global standards, global curricula, and then he came back and he put billions of dollars into Common Core, and they're bragging that Common Core is aligned with the international standards that are being developed. So global education, global healthcare, global climate change, global agricultural policy, they're building, like I said earlier, the most comprehensive system of tyranny that's ever been devised.
Well, you're the clearest voice in many ways. You have such clarity in your voice. In the second section, which we're going to go to in seconds, I'm going to focus on mental health and the World Health Organization. You want to get scared? Come to the next segment.
Tired of being surveilled and tracked by the wireless phone companies and a rogue government? Get off the surveillance grid by turning to Volta Wireless. By plugging the Volta SIM card into your phone, you become hidden from the spy networks of AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and other carriers while maintaining your full ability to place and receive phone calls and SMS texts. Go to VoltaWireless.com and use discount code BTV to save big on your first month. You get free VPN services included, plus a private messenger that's encrypted, as well as another Volta private phone number that can coexist with your current number. Learn more at VoltaWireless.com and use discount code BTV for major savings. It works with both iPhones and Android phones across 200 plus countries. Volta Wireless is the official wireless privacy sponsor of Brighteon.tv.
Hello, I'm Dr. Steve Hotze. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Are you fed up with your doctor giving you drugs simply to mask your symptoms rather than treating the cause? As you age, I believe you should be brimming with energy, vitality, and enthusiasm for life. The Hotze Health and Wellness Center treats individuals from all over the country and world in an environment of extraordinary hospitality. We specialize in the treatment of allergies, yeast, replenishing natural hormones, vitamin and mineral supplementation, and a healthy eating lifestyle, all of which boost your immune system, increase your energy level, and your health span. If you'd like to obtain and maintain health and wellness naturally without pharmaceutical drugs, then contact one of our wellness consultants today at 281-698-8698 or visit HOTZEHWC.com and request a free copy of my best-selling book, Hormones, Health, and Happiness.
Welcome back, folks, to what will be, I think, a really interesting second portion here. Alex Newman, tell the folks about you, because if they've been listening and they don't know you, they're going to be thinking, who is this person?
Well, I appreciate it very much, Dr. Bregan. Thank you. I'm a journalist most of the time. I've been in journalism since I graduated from college about 12 years ago. I write for a lot of different publications. I'm senior editor at the New American Magazine. My personal website is libertysentinel.org. People can see it there. I also write for a lot of other publications, including the Epoch Times, one of the biggest newspapers in America, and certainly the best newspaper that I know of on planet Earth. In addition to that, I've been a teacher for the last 12 years. I've been teaching high school seniors. I work as a consultant. I have several shows that I do, including one that I was honored to have you on several times, one that's every weekday. It's called The Sentinel Report. And then as a volunteer kind of side gig, I also serve as executive director for Public School Exit. We're trying to raise awareness of what's happening in the public schools and get as many children as possible into the safe sanctuary of homeschools, good private schools, where they're going to get a real education and learn how to think.
Well, your knowledge, your communication skills, that's really tremendous. Well, all right, folks, here comes one of the most awful threats imaginable on the face of the earth. Let's play number four, and this is courtesy of James Uguski, who told me about it.
All of us, at some point in our lives, are affected by mental health problems. We might have mental health problems ourselves, or know someone who does. Conditions range from the most common, like depression and anxiety, or problems with alcohol or drugs, to bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. It is well known that poor mental health contributes to physical health and social problems. It also results in economic loss for individuals, families, and communities. And people who experience mental health problems are often socially isolated or at risk of human rights violations. Yet, even though poor mental health has serious consequences for whole societies, it remains one of the most neglected areas of global efforts to improve health. The Director General of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, is prioritizing mental health as an area of urgent need.
There is no health without mental health. That's why WHO has established a special initiative for mental health to accelerate access to quality mental health care, which respects people's human rights and reaches those most in need of services and support.
The WHO Special Initiative for Mental Health is aiming to ensure that 100 million more people have access to quality and affordable mental health services by 2023. In January 2020, the World Health Organization brought together representatives, including the ministries of health, from the first six countries to benefit from the initiative. Decision makers considered the mental health needs in their countries. They listened to mental health service users, experts, and other countries with expertise of mental health system reform. And then they determined their top priorities and discussed approaches to bring about change. The World Health Organization will support these six countries over the next 5 years to achieve significant reform for mental.
Okay, I really wanted folks to get a sense of this because they make it so concrete. Now, let me suggest to you what this high standard of mental health is going to be around the world. Well, drugging everybody they can get their hands on. This is the same organization that is trying to vaccinate every single human being in the womb and on up. This is who they are. They are the most corrupt people on the face of the earth. They're in the bed with all the big money and the Chinese communists and Bill Gates. They'll get everybody on earth on psych drugs. I mean, after all, don't we all have problems? Don't we all struggle? And if they don't work, then they're going to use electroshock treatment. That's another state-of-the-art textbook approach to mental health. Drugs don't work, electroshock. Now, I spent a lot of my life fighting and shutting down most of the lobotomy and psychosurgery in the world. But believe me, when they get it backed by the World Health Organization, you know, they'll be giving lobotomies out at a higher rate than they are now. Well, now it's pretty rare. They'll get back to how much they used to do it, and then they'll jack it up. What else is a part of routine mental health? Mental health people have the power to lock up other human beings because they think they're a danger to themselves or other people. And those standards are being loosened as well. They'll be locking up people because they need it. I mean, that's how these folks think. Maybe state mental hospitals. That's been the state of the art in psychiatry for a long time. The only reason they declined was that patients started to get covered around the world in socialist and Western world by Social Security, so they could ship them out to old age homes or let them be on the streets. You know, that's what we've done. So this using psychiatry is the most devastating weapon they could have. Now, in psychiatry was the forerunner of the Holocaust. Look up the psychiatric Holocaust on my website, jimpregan.com. And the whole apparatus of the gas chambers and the putting people on trains and sending them to killing centers, that all originating without much, if any, oversight by the Führer out of psychiatry, who had been just planning such an opportunity to get rid of the, quote, useless eaters. In Russia and China and other places, it's been used on individuals to, in Russia, they developed a new diagnosis called sluggish schizophrenia in USSR, really specifically, that empire, specifically to lock up dissidents. And you know that, some of you know that I've been very critical of Robert Malone, because he has taken a concept by Desmond, a man named Matthias Desmond, who developed a concept called mass formation. It doesn't make a lot of sense, doesn't have much basis to it. But then Malone added mass psychosis to it. And what it is basically doing is setting a precedent for diagnosing masses of people with a diagnosis. So if you get a lot of I'm not saying this is even Malone's aim. I don't know what his aim is, because I haven't been able to debate it with him. I haven't been able to find any publications about it from his viewpoint. I have no idea why a virologist would be interested in it, but that's what we're dealing with right now. And one of the reasons, that's one of the reasons he's suing me. And we just have to speak out, because there's such a threat from mass psychosis. Put it in the concept of the doctors at the World Health Organization declaring a mass psychosis due to war, maybe, or due to famine, or whatever they want. Now I got a surprise, because I found out that marvelous Alex Newman was writing 10 years ago about the dangers of psychiatry before we knew each other. So I want you to pick up on that and just bring in whatever you want. We've got a good 13 minutes here.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bregan. And yeah, it's so interesting. Obviously, I am not nearly as familiar with the dangers as you, since you've been talking about this and studying this for many decades. But it's interesting, because as you were talking about it during the break, I said, wait a minute, I wrote about this. So I went back into the archives, and in 2012, I published an article in the beginning of 2012 called UN Seeking Global Mental Health Plan. And I warned about exactly the things that you're talking about here: the abuse of psychiatry to come after dissidents, the abuse of psychiatry to drug people. And, you know, we've seen this increasingly even in the United States of America. I just spoke with Dr. Meryl Nass just last week. Mm-hmm. She was subjected to a forced psychiatric evaluation because she was calling out the COVID narrative. She was telling people not to take the injections and they'd be better off taking ivermectin. Now, the idea that these global predators, as I love the way you refer to them, I think it's a perfect term. The idea that these global predators, I think most of them are probably psychopaths. The idea that they're going to come up with a global mental health plan for us, frankly, is beyond crazy. It's the looniest thing I've ever heard. And we have got to resist this. But, you know, it is a big part of their agenda. If you look at Agenda 2030, they called this, mm-hmm. When they were passing it, the master plan for humanity. If you look in there, goal number 3 deals with, quote unquote, healthcare. And they say, you know, we need lots of abortions for everybody. They call it a sexual and reproductive rights. They also say in sub-goal 3.4 that by 2030, we are going to promote mental health for everyone. And frankly, I don't want the UN cleaning toilet bowls, much less worrying about my mental health or anybody else's mental health. This is just a crazy plan in the truest sense of the term, no pun intended.
Wow. And, you know, psychiatry has a long history of being abusive. It's a very interesting. I had a classicist on a number of years ago who talked about, I'm not going to mention his name because in the current environment, he might not want me to mention his name. But he pointed out that the first Greek play that they could find pieces of, big pieces of, is about the abuse of medical doctors playing at mental health, at psychiatry. And it's about this doctor who's going to put somebody into either in the hospital or give them drugs or both. And he's avidly going to do it because this person is crazy. But actually, it's the psychiatrist who's mixed up and he's crazy. And I mean, that's like 400 BC or something.
Wow.
So thoughtful people have been suspicious, probably even of Hippocrates, you know, who wanted to divide the body up into humors. I think he was actually one to do that. Maybe it was somebody else. But, you know, the early thinkers, they've always wanted to explain what they thought was mental problems. And the physicians have always wanted it to be medical. The emblem of the American Psychiatric Association has on it the face of Benjamin Rush. Benjamin Rush was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and at times he's a great freedom fighter. At another time, he locked up his son for the rest of his life in a mental hospital, basically in a cell. And he also, his students actually learned that bloodletting was really pretty good from him. Hardly any other major figures were still doing bloodletting, and they bled George Washington to death. So on the other hand, he was also a brave man, a very mixed figure, and you know, in treating patients with some of the, you know, plagues that were hitting the cities. But he was using bloodletting with people who were dehydrated, so he probably murdered a bunch of people too. Complicated. It's very hard to treat people as if all they are is diseases when they're upset, when they're in anguish. And psychiatry, I believe, is a materialistic religion. And it is the religion with which the extreme left wing has replaced other forms of spirituality and religion. And it's used for religious persecution too, as a substitute for religious persecution. It's all very complicated, but the point is, if you try to help people deal with life's problems, get over being so freaked out they're seeing things or hearing things or feeling things. You know, people who really become overwhelmed, so their minds are no longer under good conscious control. That's what it is. They become overwhelmed, helpless. They're not diseases, it's human experiences. And once you vary from a more spiritual and psychological approach to helping people in emotional distress, you become their torturers and their murderers. I have one other thought I'll share, and then I want to come back to Alex, because he has so much to say. That is that ultimately all of this, all the goodness is about love, and all the badness is about everything else. And if you don't bring a treasuring of individuals, a love for individuals, which is very hard to sustain if you don't believe there's a God. I mean, one of the whole beauties of the concept of God is as God's children, we are treasures. We are to be taken care of. We are to be given opportunity as any other human being, not some special opportunity. But and the founders deeply believe this. Don't let the progressive historians kid you, tell you they were deists who thought that God wound up the clock and then it just ticked away. And it's the opposite of that. Many founders came out and said, God intervened because we weren't enough to win this war. George Washington just emphasized, folks, I couldn't have done it. Providence did it. So, and I'm sure that Alex Newman's very well aware of this, but we've got time for you to move in on this now some more. please.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Dr. Bregan, and I couldn't agree more with everything that you're talking about. And so as I started digging into this over a decade ago, the WHO Executive Board had just put out this resolution. It was called A Global Burden of Mental Health Disorders and the Need for a Comprehensive Coordinated Response. And as you read it, they say that we really need a comprehensive mental health action plan for the whole world. I called on the WHO Director General to come up with policies that every nation could and should adopt. They called for a People's Charter for Mental Health. I mean, if that doesn't sound like something out of Cuba or North Korea, I don't know what does. But really, yeah, you're exactly right, too, about the role that psychiatry and psychology increasingly are playing in the lives of people who try to just shut God out of the picture. You know, they don't want to think of eternal things. They don't want there to be any kind of transcendent truth. And they don't want to feel guilt about things that they know are wrong. And so then they just come up with these ideas out of psychology and psychiatry that the problem is not that you did something wrong. It's just the way that you're looking at it. If we just give you the right drugs, this right chemical cocktail, if we teach you that what you're doing is totally fine, then you won't feel any guilt, and then you're going to be mentally healthy. You know, there's a reason why we have a conscience. And when we do things that are wrong, when we lie, when we cheat, when we steal, when we commit adultery, there's that little voice almost inside of us that says, hey, that was wrong. And psychiatry and psychology, when they try to obliterate that, they actually put us all in great danger. The conscience serves an incredibly significant role in the lives of humans as individuals, and also in the life of a society collectively. If we lose our conscience, if we lose our ability to recognize that we're doing something wrong, it's very, very dangerous. And you know, to speak on the role of the founding fathers and their understanding, you know, they declared in very plain language. They put it down in the first words of our Declaration of Independence very early on. They said it's a self-evident truth that God created us, that God endowed us with certain unalienable rights, that the government exists to protect these rights. And without those concepts, our freedom is gone, right? If God gave you a right to liberty, some psychiatrist can't come along and say, well, I think your brain isn't working as it should. And so based on these UN WHO mental health guidelines, we're going to have to lock you away and throw away the key and turn you into a zombie, or worse, lobotomize you. You know, this stuff, I think people really need to recognize that this is totally incompatible with freedom. It's totally incompatible with a civilized society. And even if you trust the people who are developing this now, recognize that there is not just a chance, but almost a certainty that at some point, wicked people will gain control of these powers and will be in very, very big trouble.
Absolutely. And the classic example was German psychiatry. You know, German psychiatry was considered to be an outstanding form of psychiatry. It was right on the cutting edge of psychiatry. They were respected leaders. The American Psychiatric Association, well, to give you an idea of how bad it got during this time, one of the reasons why Hitler knew he could do his sterilization programs for the disabled, the mentally ill, all these categories, which are just mostly to diminish people. He knew he could do that because he had people come from the United States from our sterilization programs in California, where sterilization became mandatory for release from the talk about a mandate from the hospitals. And Virginia had a big program, tens of thousands of people. And one of the names comes back to me from the past, Popino, was the head of a big family planning organization, and he was deeply involved in supporting sterilization. And he went with a delegation to Germany to reassure the Führer that there'd be no complaints from America. And then when the actual program of exterminating several hundred, probably 200,000, maybe less, a great number of patients basically cleared out their state mental hospitals and refilled them and cleared them out again in Germany. When that happened, it was known about in the United States, but nobody in psychiatry talks about it. You won't find any textbooks now. But the American Psychiatric Association held a debate in about 1941 between a doctor who wanted to sterilize all of the disturbed children and a doctor who wanted to kill them at age 5. And then the American Psychiatric Association, I still belong to it because I won't let them get me out. American Psychiatric Association had an editorial siding with the death, killing the 5-year-olds. And they said the big problem was going to be to handle the guilt of the mothers. There's just no way to exaggerate the danger of unleashing psychiatry on the world through the UN. It could become the most vicious part of the whole empire building that's going on right now. Can I give you a last word with 17 seconds?
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program, Dr. Brangett. And just to bring it all full circle, one of the big financiers of these disgusting Nazi medical things were the Rockefellers. They were the Absolutely. Biggest financiers of Mengele. And now here they are financing the one world religion stuff. So thank you very much for having me on the program.
Thank Dr. you Brangett. Very much for being on our show. Reclaiming ourselves is what we got to do. And refounding America is what we got to do.